Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And it is Feedback Friday. And we are going to dive back into the look of the presidential election. So today we're really going to focus on that. There's a lot of things that we could easily be touching on. There's, you know, the gun rights. I mean, every myopic issue out there, whether it is a staged situation or not, I'm not here to make anybody feel bad for, any loss of life or anything like that. The problem is that when you get that far down, this goes back down to the scale of liberty. And I know I don't cover all of these things all the time, but you have to understand that the scale of liberty is very linear. And it is literally a single straight defined line between two very specific points. The point of full liberty. A paradigm and a world where everyone must choose for themselves. And the other end of this line is subjugation, where you have no choice. Now, there are consequences to the choices we make. Either every knee will bow, or there will be a consequence to that. And so, but that is God's will, right? I mean, so let's keep God's will out of, this spectrum here. Because bottom line, we all have the responsibility to ensure that everyone has the opportunity to be fully informed and make the right decision. That's the side of liberty. It would be reprehensible. It would be repugnant to anybody in the world of liberty to actually, force upon somebody something that they couldn't make the decisions. Now, you have to teach a child how to actually live in the world of liberty. And we're not doing that. It is very obvious, because if you really think about it, teaching a child, it's the same thing as the saying to walk in the ways of the Lord. The Lord is not a dictator. He gives us commandments to live by. We can choose to live by them or not. We can, break them and suffer the consequences, either in this life, the next, or what have you. We have the free agency to choose, and we have also this thing in the land of liberty called responsibility and accountability. We will be accountable for our decisions, and we'll be responsible to those whom, we have harmed or what have you. So as we start basically, migrating or transitioning from liberty to subjugation, every inch of the way is this concept of, well, we've got to make a law. We can't allow people to do these things. When we use those words, we cannot allow you to do that, then we really, really need to be careful in making sure that we're not denying somebody their liberty. There's probably nothing more sacred and probably nothing more important than people having this liberty. So going down this rat hole, I want you to understand that regardless of what's going on out there, whether people are doing this deliberately, because you have to understand on the subjugation side, there have been cases and times, and the evidence will come out, how people have used, terrible acts as manipulations to try to obtain their means. In other words, the harming of people, the killing of people, whatever it is, doesn't matter to them. It's only an end. It's only an end to their means, or it's only a means to their ends. I'm sorry, I got it backwards. It's a means to their end. In other words, this is what they need to do so that they can get where they want to go. It's really that simple. And so it would be a lot simpler if I didn't confuse these things. But forgive me. Anyway, So those things are going to continue to happen. We're not here to entertain you and to turn the pages of what's going on. When we do that, it's really more for marketing, folks. I mean, to be honest with you, we're just trying to sell you on this concept that it's not going to get any better. It won't. And only a fool truly believes that any of the presidents currently, any person that is running for president, I don't care if they're a third party, and I don't care what third party they are, any president that is running that is not fully aligned with the Constitution really is just an aberration. It's just like Ronald Reagan. There's never, as a matter of fact, I had this conversation this past week with a gentleman that's running for a leadership position in the party. And so it comes down to this. When we look at the theatrics of politics, it's about compromise. It's not about following the law. It's not about living within the framework of the Constitution. Politics is the art of coming up with a compromise so that both parties agree to do something that they don't have the power to do. And they figure out how to do that, and then they do it. And they just tell everybody, don't worry, we can do this. And they continue. This is how we're, you know, in this situation, folks. Compromise is why and how we're in this situation. It was a compromise when they created the education system. Well, we're going to do this. And then, we're going to inject this, like sex education, like social engineering, like critical race theory, like dysphoria of your children and weaponizing them as Bolsheviks. Every step of the way, it's been a compromise. It is never on the table to undo a compromise. In other words, it's like making a deal with the devil. Well, if this doesn't work as advertised, this will be completely repealed. That's never happened, folks. It's never happened. So what makes you think that it's going to happen? And as a matter of fact, you know, everybody had hope that Obamacare was going to get done away with, you know, when it's going to be, you know, what was it? Repeal Obamacare, repeal it. Then it came to repeal and replace. Do you really believe anybody in the queue running for president who's been president, like Trump? Do you really believe that they're going to make things better? Now, they may not be throwing fuel on the fire, and they may not be inviting the whole world to add fuel onto the fire with them. But I'm here to tell you, it's only going to get worse until you demand compliance. Now, I interject with people in social media and in other realms. And, you know, a lot of times these people have no idea who I am. They don't know what I'm doing. They don't understand, you know, the simplicity of the solution. And sadly, they don't want to take the time to even go figure it out and go, you know what, this guy's got a point here. If I'm wrong, and I work with a lot of smart people, and as a matter of fact, I've been working with a guy that has been trying for, 8 years to try to find another way. And he's finally, this past year, he's finally saying, you know, you're right on this. Which means to me that, you know, there's still some things I'm not right on. And this is a failing of mine. And it's not really me being right here. I'm actually just taking and repeating. I am repeating the calls further from the guardhouse than my own out to the people. And what I'm basically telling you is this isn't really me being right, but I get to be right because I'm citing, I'm quoting, I'm regurgitating those who have been right all along. And so when you do those things, if you like being right and you don't like having people to drag you through the mud or what have you, because that's happened to me. I think it happens to all of us when we, you know, speak out of turn. We don't know what we're talking about. And next thing you know, oops, wow, that was wrong. Oh, I'm really sorry. So this gentleman that I'm working with, you know, he says, well, you know, you're right on these things. which means, like I said, it means that there's obviously some still some things he still hasn't proven right yet. In other words, he hasn't gone to the sources. And I've given him the sources before. He has all the sources. You have all the sources. What is it going to take for you to do what we all have to do? If you don't understand that the states are the only entities that can force and permanently put the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution, then you need to read Madison's materials, and we're happy to have it. There's an article out there. It's called Interposition versus Nullification, or Nullification versus Interposition. It's on my Constitutional Articles page. Go read that. It's a 20-page article that actually dives into what Thomas Jefferson and James Madison were doing. So, folks, we've got a lot to go through, but bottom line, you know, when we look at what the heck's going on out there, there are people that are calculated and making decisions to actually as a means to their end. So that's going to continue. It's going to continue to get worse. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. And there's people I talk to on a daily basis that can't imagine how it's going to get worse. And then another week passes by and it does. Come on. Let's put our big, our adult britches on. Let's, go out and actually do what we really need to do. We have to start holding government accountable. It is not going to happen any other way. And so this whole process of accountability, holding government accountable, the petition is the initiation of this. Republic Review is the final blow of it. This is the checks and balances that nobody wants to acknowledge because it ruins their ability to play political theatrics. So in Washington State, there's a politician who is running for the WSRP chair. And, he's claiming to be a constitutionalist. And he's a good guy. And my heart goes out to him. He lost his wife not too long ago. He's a good guy. I wouldn't wish anything like that, even on my enemy. But when it comes to the Constitution, this man has no evidence whatsoever of standing on the floor and actually pointing to how full compliance, what is full compliance and what must be done to get there. And so don't tell me you're a constitutionalist, because I'm only using this one gentleman as an example. As a matter of fact, Kathy McMorris Rogers, and we talked about her last week, about the demagoguery that she uses. Politicians use political theatrics. They use demagoguery. We have to stop listening to this crap. It's not going to lead. It makes you feel better because they're speaking to your passion, the hate, the fear, those things that are very powerful emotions. Now let's start learning to attune to the intellect side of ourselves and start understanding that really we have to do it. We got to quit counting on them doing it because they're not going to do it. There's nothing in it for them. It's just like these, conservative entertainers. There's nothing in it for them to fix this problem. They're making millions. Are you kidding me? And as it gets worse, it seems like they're making more. And they're going, well, if everything goes sideways, at least I've got a lot of money and I'm taken care of. I've actually heard that. I complained about that recently with, talking about Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity. And I'm going, what a bunch of opulent pukes. I'm sorry. They may be really nice guys, but when they have that kind of paradigm, and the reality is they really don't care. Prove me wrong. As a matter of fact, I was so bold, and I used to say this all the time. I bet my life on this stuff because that's what I'm doing. Don't think that this is some, casual, Hawaii shirt Friday type of thing. It's not. This is life and death. This is liberty or die. And so when you get that strong and when you actually have, you know, when you have that level of confidence, you can say, I bet my life that these guys won't do it. Prove me wrong. I will leave it to them. I think I said this. I'll leave it to Glenn Beck, you know, to pull the trigger. If I am wrong, that he won't get, because he's not going to get involved. Bill O'Reilly, I mean, they can kill me. Prove me wrong. They won't. There's nothing in it for them. And as a matter of fact, if we get to that point where it comes time where they actually do change, and I bet, you know, am I betting my life? If they are men that have any inkling of God, they will ask, they'll seek forgiveness from all of us, and we will quickly forgive them. But we don't have time to go through the long process of, oh, how do you feel, and the analysis. We've got a fight to fight. We have to keep our head in the game. You know, opportunity costs are killing us. You know, I spent a lot of time last night, and I've been trying to work like I used to work when I was much younger, like 5-6 years ago, where I would stay up late. And last night I stayed up late, and I sent an email. I looked at, you know, my English, and, you know, gee whiz, that was terrible. I don't write well when it's late, but I can get some volume done. And so I just have to go back through and edit that. And sometimes the editing and all of that takes more time. So I don't know if I'm hurting myself by, you know, wasting time by working late and working while I'm tired, but at least I'm not wasting my opportunity costs. You know, this goes down to one other little adage, you know, grandparents. You know, the reason why grandparents are so nice to the grandchildren and their children, you know, it's the old adage, well, they're just trying to get into heaven because of, you know, how tyrannical they were as parents. Anyway, I digress. So I think we need to really say this on non-content days. Everybody needs to start understanding who the enemy is as far as nations go. China is the greatest threat to humanity on the face of the earth. And we just need to constantly repeat this. Our government is exercising warfare against us as we speak. Prove me wrong on that. Now, the one thing I want to get into before we actually start talking about the candidates is nominations for president. And I have a lecture out there, or a video where I was speaking to the Constitution Party. And I asked them, I just put it out there, why is it that they go through the same process that the Republican Democrat Party go through? That's not constitutional. Why does a party even create a nomination? Tell me, show me in the Constitution where parties must put forth a nomination for president. As a matter of fact, show me where there is a containment or any control on who can be a candidate, and, you know, whether they can still be a candidate or not. In other words, show me how a state has the authority to not allow somebody as president for a federal election, where they can actually not allow somebody because they don't have a party presence. Are we a Republican form of government? Or are we a party, a monarchical party form of government, a monarchical party, democratic socialist government? And that is just the essence of this. And this is why I've been telling the third parties that they need to create a First Amendment petition, one or two, just regarding the Electoral College and the party control of it. It is all unconstitutional. There is no limit to how many presidents we can have. And as far as nominations go, you can only have one when we get elected, right? But when it really comes down to it, the only way you can actually have a serious run as president is through the Electoral College. In other words, if you as a president, as a presidential nominee, to be really serious, you have to have a elector who's going to actually vote for you and campaign for you in your congressional district. Because technically, when we really look at how the Electoral College is supposed to go, we're supposed to, in our congressional districts, every 2 years, we're supposed to choose a representative. And every other 2 years, on the fourth year, the presidential run in 2024, we should be choosing our representative as well as our elector to choose the president for us. See, our electors are the ones that are supposed to go read the Constitution. This is how it's supposed to happen. And so the electors are the ones that are supposed to be out there campaigning, and then their name is supposed to be on the ballot. In other words, we're supposed to choose our electors. That's exactly what it says in Article 1. Or not Article 1, Article 2, Section 1. Go read it. It's right there at the very beginning. There's nowhere where the party actually has the authority to choose the electors for you. We, the people, are to choose the electors. This was the process. This is what the ratification debates even said. So my point is that why is it that no third party out there is actually having, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10 candidates and smearing them and making sure that they're all out there? You know, and I believe that all they need to do is actually get one person to actually stand up. This is how we get these petitions done. When we actually have one person in each state stand up as an elector and demand that that name be on the ballot. In other words, let's say you're the Constitution Party. Let's say you're the Independent American Party, and you want to get somebody, the elector on the ballot for that party. That's what's name is supposed to be on the ballot. And so if you're in a congressional district, you should be able to go to the Secretary of State and say, I am an elector, and I am an elector for this particular, you don't even have to name the party, for this particular candidate. And I demand that, you know, I be able to campaign and have my name on the ballot. Wow. Instead of the presidential candidate's name, because that's how it's supposed to be. We're supposed to choose our electors. Anyway, I believe that if we actually started using First Amendment petitions, it would actually start proving how our entire system has been stolen and how people have been duped into the party system. And you know what? Bottom line, if you want to have a party, you know, primary, then you have to pay for it. In other words, we need to have this is how we start decimating the parties, because we make them accountable. Well, you want to have a primary, you want to actually, you know, downsize and get down to a single candidate for the general election. Okay, that's nice. But we, the state, aren't paying for it. We, the people, aren't paying for it. You got to pay for a party. Watch it stop, because they don't have the money. And by the way, folks, if you look at the money that they bring in from their membership drive and everything else, having to actually pay their way would bankrupt them. Folks, the Constitution and using First Amendment petitions, we can act. This is another way we can be attacking. You know, you don't have to fight one appendage at a time. If we have 40 petitions, we're attacking 40 appendages, 40 violations, 40 theses, 40 grievances that are being committed. It's not 40 of the same. These are 40 unique and very specific, like the Department of Transportation. We have a petition now that's ready. It's going to be going up on the website probably next week. I'm still working through some of the parts to it. But anyway, I mean, it's getting better. And I want to have it close enough to where we actually have, I think, a good end product before we put it up there. And then we'll actually have another petition for you. That'll be a total of 5 that we have up there. And there are a few more that are coming. We actually have one that's done, but it needs to be kind of doctored up. It's a good example, so I think we'll just put up the example. It's the petition that we had that would have actually got rid of Jay Inslee from the governorship for violating his oath of office and for basically committing an insurgency against the Constitution and against the people, because he took away the rights of the people. Folks, I can't tell you enough. We have to start holding our public servants accountable. That is our government. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so because the break kind of interrupted my thought and what I was trying to project there, I can't emphasize enough, folks, we have all the opportunities. And it's all about teaching people and proving to them that they're doing this. They're making it up as they go along, and they're getting away with it. They're not following the law of the land. And the law in a republican form of government is our king. We have to stop looking to the politicians as our king. We have to, as our rulers. The law is what is to rule us, and they're to live within the law. Anyway, let me just move on. I appreciate all the feedback regarding the draft, all of it. I know it when I read it and I break back and forth, it fragments. I get it. But the highlights, as some have pointed out, really do make a difference when you actually hear the language of what Jefferson put in versus what was left. And so I appreciate the feedback, and that's why we do that every 4th of July. It's the same thing. We have very specific seasonal content for Thanksgiving. We go through Washington's Proclamation. We'll actually read that. For Christmas, we actually have a very specific message that helps everybody understand how Christmas was truly the first form of societal manipulation in America. Now, before we really get into the presidential candidates, because I've done a lot of research, you know, we want to kind of review the current status of the value of gold. And before the show, gold was on the 7th of March, 1814. It's trending up now, and it's at 1934. So it's, you know, $120 up from, what, 4 months ago? Yeah, 4 months ago. Silver is still trending up, and it's now up going to $23.19 when it was $20 on March 7th. Excuse me. So do what you will. Fed now is coming, and it's not going to come in like a lion. It's going to be like, you know, it won't even be a squeaky door. It'll just be a door will open and go, huh, okay, well, Fed now is launched. It'll take time. They're doing all sorts of things in the background in setting the stage before they start closing our currency door. This is, and there will be, a rapid push at a very specific point. And so whenever we get close to, or when they actually kick off the next financial meltdown, you will see everything happen. And you'll go, oh my gosh. Now, this doesn't mean that, you know, the world has come to the end and the second coming is upon us. These are only phases, stepping stones, milestones that have to be done to get us towards the point of Armageddon. And We don't have to be involved in this, folks. We actually have all of the authority within the Constitution if we assert it and use it as our weapon in holding our public servants. As we're going into break, basically, it's not holding our government accountable. The government is actually being steered by these people in office. It's like a ship. And, you know, as a ship sets sail, like this nation sets sail, the people on that ship started creating these wings, or I should say, these suites that they started building out and out and out. So if you really imagine just this ship, you know, as the foundation and what our government really has the authority to do based on the Constitution and its amendments, the legitimate ship, you know, it's because every time we actually amend the Constitution, we get down to the source of the ship and actually create a, you know, a broadening of the hull, whatever, you know, a new mast for a sail, what have you. But everything else that they've been doing has been done by, you know, coat hangers, you know, masking tape or duct tape, you know, wire strands and ties and glue. And they're building this huge palace. We have a palace underneath this or over this ship. And it will not weather the storm if we demand our ship back. In other words, it all falls away. It's a house of cards. So as we start looking at what we need to do, just have faith that the Constitution doesn't have any problems. Anybody that tells you the 14th Amendment, that's a red herring argument. There's no evidence of what they're saying. There is, just because people have misinterpreted the 14th Amendment along with many other parts of the Constitution, right? The Commerce Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clause, those things are actually in the Constitution. They've been misconstrued and actually misinterpreted and abused and used as portals to create unconstitutional government. So, moving on. Remember, I've mentioned, even at the beginning of the show, demagoguery is a powerful tool, and we need to keep on looking at who uses demagoguery so that we can actually say this person should not be in office. Leaders look upstream. What you will find is a vast array of incumbent politicians and challengers who are stating the obvious, failing to look upstream for the real causes to actually fix the problem and not the symptoms. We have to keep cognizant. We have to keep mindful of these things. So, as I mentioned before, CMR, you know, my particular, you know, representative, if you want to call her that. She's not. She's a shill for herself. She's a hack. She's a Republican hack. And it infuriates me that she's been able to maintain her position. It's just like all the rest of the hacks that are in Congress. We have to stand up. Oh, well, you know, we're better off in a red district allowing a Democrat to take that seat so that we'll actually take it seriously to take it back. Holding the people accountable, because right now we're not holding anybody accountable. Okay, so let's get into the presidential race. Now, Doug Burgum, he is the current governor of North Dakota. I have so many bad things to say about him that I will just tell you the biggest red flag is this man is personal friends with Bill Gates. Now, he's a billionaire, and we're going to get into how he became a billionaire and how in the heck did North Dakota allow this guy to become their governor in 2016? Did they not already know Bill Gates was bad news? What the heck's going on? This is, to me, this goes down to, well, he's our guy. We put him in. You know, and it's like when you buy a car and it's falling apart on you, nobody wants to admit that they bought a lemon, especially when they went out on a limb saying, oh, I did all the due diligence. I looked at this and we investigated everything. This is a great car. It's really hard to eat those words. It is really hard to eat those words. And so I think that North Dakota has truly failed to eat those words, because this man should have been held accountable. And as a matter of fact, the people in North Dakota, if you are in North Dakota and you are not doing a petition to go after this man and your legislature, you are failing as citizens. You know, this is where I get into scorched earth mode, and I shouldn't be this way. We shouldn't be this way. We really need to try to use love and, you know, help people understand. But doggone it, sometimes it just doesn't work. Anyway, so Bill Gates was his biggest investor in his initial run. And as a matter of fact, I did the math on his campaign for governor in 2016. $2 billion governor race. And he squeaked it out. North Dakota, $2 billion for the governorship. If you don't believe me, I will send you the spreadsheet. You can check it against the online, what do you want to call that, donations tracking that the government does. Bill Gates donated twice on the same day as Bill Gates and William Gates III. Over 100,000, basically him and Microsoft gave Mr. Burgum, at a very specific point when he needed $500,000, he got basically $500,000 from Gates and Microsoft in 2016. This man is a globalist and cannot be trusted. I will repeat this when I'm done talking about this man. Ballotpedia has scrubbed Burgum's governor campaign info. And I'm just telling you, when you start really looking at what he's done and how he did all of this, I'm just going, oh my gosh. What the heck? On March 21st, 2023, he violated his oath of office. This is the most latest and, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the biggest blow against the Constitution by actually signing into law the North Dakota Central, or the CBDC bill, basically, the Central Banking Digital Currency. In 1979, so here's the history on this guy. In 1979, he went to Stanford. And he became personal friends with this guy by the name of Steve Ballmer, who later became Microsoft CEO. As a matter of fact, you're going to see real straight connections with Ballmer, Gates, and Burgum. In 1983, Doug basically, you know, had no interest in protecting the family farm and maintaining the value of land, and quickly converted that into this, because he mortgaged the entire family farm and invested it into the Great Plains software, becoming the president of the company in 1984. So apparently there was this software company out there, and he came forward with a lot of money and then ended up becoming president. Now in 2001, he became a $1.1 billion sellout to Microsoft, to, you know, guess who, and then magically became an executive in Microsoft to the newly appointed CEO, Steve Ballmer. In other words, when Ballmer became the CEO. And guess what? I'm telling you that there's a direct connection here, because after Ballmer, they ended up buying that. And then Burgum became, not that the billions didn't make him rich enough, then they made him a Microsoft executive, basically appointing him over the Microsoft Business Solutions. He's obviously bought his governorship in 2016 with over that $2 billion donations. And he, bottom line, he is a globalist and cannot be trusted in public service, and actually should be held accountable immediately. He's running as a Republican. He should be held immediately accountable and make it so that his name could never see a paper called a ballot ever again. In other words, it's one thing for him to be in the newspaper. It doesn't matter how it's printed, but his name should never be printed on a ballot ever again. He should be banned for what he did while he was in office. And bottom line, he does not care. This man is a sellout. And it's all about moving the ball forward. It doesn't matter where you are on the pegboard. You know, you could be the top dog, you could be the bottom dog. They all have to carry their weight. They all have to do their job. And he's only in this race to do his job. I can't tell you. Out of everybody on this race, this guy is, you know, I'll just say it. He cannot be trusted. This guy is a globalist. He cannot be trusted. Now, Nikki Haley. Now, I've said this before that there was question. It has been confirmed. Neither of Haley's parents were citizens of the United States when she was born. It's done. She can never hold legally, constitutionally, doesn't mean that people can't get into the office, but she can never constitutionally hold the office of the president or vice president of the United States. This means for her to be a citizen, she too must naturalize and can never be considered because she became an anchor baby. She cannot be trusted. I'm telling you, friends, because anybody that's in this race that think that they're entitled to be in this race, and they know that there's a caveat next to their citizenship, that they're really not a natural born citizen, then they can't be a president. So why is it that why are we wasting any wind on her? We need to actually stop the dialogue, say, I'm not even going to talk about her. She should not be on the race. And that's all we have to repeat. We just repeat. She is ineligible to be on the ballot, period. Ineligible. Now, Vivek Ramaswamy is also, if you've done the due diligence on this, he is also not a naturally born citizen. He, too, is ineligible. End all conversations. Done. Not to be on the ballot. Whenever his name comes up, he's ineligible. We've got to remove him from the ballot. Prove me wrong. He has no qualifications to be president. One of the fundamental qualifications, you must be a natural born citizen. Chris Christie, lots of red flags with this guy. And as a matter of fact, he's always come across as the thug boss, some union type of thug, right? First off, number one red flag, he's a lawyer. And in 1993, he, like you see, all of these other lawyer politicians, even Obama, Obama, I don't think ever practiced law. He became a professor. He was just given a position. So when you see the legal field have these elite people that are just kind of, wow, how did this guy even survive? Look at how the lifestyle that they had while they were surviving. They were given a pretty nice ride for doing nothing without even having, you see these lawyers out here. I see them all the time. They're struggling. And I'm going, how come they're not getting these, being fed from a silver spoon? Like Obama. Well, Chris Christie's one of them. In 1993, he joined the law firm Doogie Hewitt and Palatucci, I think. That's how you pronounce it. Palatucci. And then in 1998, 5 years later, he registered as a state lobbyist with his law firm, which opened the door for him in basically 3 years later to be nominated to be the U.S. attorney for New Jersey. And basically unanimously confirmed by the Senate, by the state Senate, and then this all sounds too good to be true, which all reeks of a fix by every creature involved in this who's making a living out of fixing things, especially for themselves. And so bottom line, when we look at then, he steps into this governorship and then he acts like, folks, I mean, when you watch and his demeanor, he believes he's entitled. He believes that, he has, this right to have access to this. Instead of actually saying, what America needs is we need humble leaders that say, this is a big mess and this is all the work that we need to do, and actually truly articulate on the core principles and on the actual problems upstream, looking at the upstream view. Where are the leaders for this? And he is not one. He is definitely not one. I find Christie illiterate on anything in reference to the Constitution and is the epitome, like I said, of a union boss who uses demagoguery like a professional. His website was down when I actually tried to go do the due diligence, but I am confident that he has no true constitutional substance since he has never used any, as we the people must demand that our president actually use the Constitution in their job. As far as I see him, he is a lapdog for the globalist. He cannot be trusted in public service. Done. He's not to be considered. Now, I'm going through, and this is just the stuff that I find. You know, I know that there's other people that have, you know, either some, you know, I'll just say secret documents or not really well published. It's just hard to find on the internet, you know, because I've been told that Larry Elders is compromised. We can't trust this guy. And I'm going to tell you something. When it comes to conservatives, nine times out of 10, they will try to scrub these obvious things like this so that people don't even smell it. That's what I found with Bergman. You know, Bergman was bragging with his relationship with Ballmer. And, you know, it's a point of bragging with his relationship with Gates. So, you know, he obtained what we would say is street creds. Oh, well, look at this guy. Well, yeah, he's a globalist. Anybody that's a Republican that has any sense will realize that we need to start turning our back on these creatures because they are globalists. They are not here to restore our liberty. They're here to manage the agenda. That's it. So, moving on. Now we have Tim Scott. Now, Tim Scott, 10 years in the House. Good guy. I can say I believe Tim Scott is a good man with a good heart. But here's the problem. He's still a swamp dweller. I mean, he still doesn't speak out on the Constitution. We should be reveling in those guys. You know, we revel in Cruz. We revel in Paul Rand. Where Paul Rand, Ayn Rand had a son. I'm sorry. We revel in these guys that actually use the Constitution, but they do that for show. These guys are hypocrites because they don't really stand up. They don't bring forth petitions. They're not turning around to the people and empowering the people like you to start using petitions. We need to create a movement. Nobody's doing this movement thing. Actually, Trump is, though. Trump is doing a movement, but it's a meandering movement that will not have any true effect. So, come on, let's really start looking at what we have and what we need to be going, where we need to be going, and why we need to be doing these things. So, his key issue, and this is on his website, his key issue is the economy, which I got to tell you, folks, something that is not delegated to the federal government. Another key issue is schools, wanting to fix schools. That's not delegated to the federal government. And public safety, another not delegated in the Constitution other than the militia. And he's not talking about the militia for restoring order. As central themes on his campaign, you would think that he'd have something, but he doesn't. And this is an indictment on where we are. Here's a good man that possibly could actually lead. Tim Scott, like I said, he's a swamp dweller. Is he compromised? There's a likelihood. But because he's an outlier, he's a black Republican conservative and actually votes conservative. Now, I don't know his full voting record, but I would be telling you that it would be probably leading in the news, and it may be in his home district, you know, how he's voted, you know, questionably on issues. He has a political science major from Charleston Southern University, indicating a career path going into politics. In other words, anybody that goes into political science, well, first thing that comes to mind is, well, that's the easy degree to get, right? But it has... it's not basket weaving, right? Political science. It's an easy, not a lot of math and that type of stuff. And, you know, you go, okay, well, why would somebody do that other than the fact that they possibly might have aspirations for a political career? This is America, and anybody can become a politician. But people don't understand that if you become a politician, you have to be held accountable to the Constitution. And, well, nobody's been doing that for well over, since they've gotten into office. I mean, two centuries plus. Bottom line, his sight is lacking on what I would consider the constitutional and substantive issues. And so, you know, I go, okay, I can't tell you that this man cannot be trusted. I cannot tell you that. There is hope for this man. But whether he actually steps up, it'll be obvious. Anybody that steps up on the Constitution, that step will be very obvious. Because the whole world will see it. And we'll all go, oh. And we will click on it. William Hurd. Now, William Hurd is running for office, and there's a few red flags with this guy, Texas A&M alumni. Oh, you have a good red state, right? Well, his big red flag comes early in his very first career choice. After he finished his degree with A&M, he went and actually became a CIA undercover officer in the Middle East and South Asia. Oh, a CIA deep state person. Then he went into defense government contracting, likely due to his connections, and fell back, forgive the expression, back asswards into, you know, an opportunity where he became, you know, affluent. Then, as we start looking, you know, as he starts talking about issues on his website, you know, he talks about issues, but none of them are, you know, focused. They're very ambiguous, and they're grossly focused on unconstitutional issues. His post-congressional book, American Reboot, is an idealist guide, and this is the title, an idealist guide to getting big things done. Well, what does that mean? When somebody says, you know, as an idealist, we need to, you know, get big things done, here's a guy telling you. He's telling you that he's going to put aside the Constitution just like Lincoln and everybody else that's gotten big things done. In other words, he has no respect for what he has to swear an oath to. Bottom line, I just truly believe that there are all sorts of ways that we could actually be taking this. I think your most important takeaway is that his ways are not the ways permitted by the Constitution. He has zero credentials on liberty and has acted as a lapdog for globalists, even within the CIA in doing that. I mean, come on. And as far as I'm concerned, he cannot be trusted in public service, period. I know he made it to the House of Representatives and he was in Congress, but as far as I'm concerned, he cannot be trusted in public service. And woe be unto those who they actually select these types of people to represent them, especially if they're not standing on the Constitution and leading and giving you actual evidence of how to do this. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.